Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly to discuss the personal politics of health. I'm often asked whether or not I recommend taking vitamins instead of just relying on nutrients from foods. I always answer that if people read the research on the use of nutrient supplementation in the prevention of disease, they would never ask the question. Supplement research goes back further than 50 years and continues today. The results are impressively supportive of the use of a variety of antioxidants, fatty acids, phospholipids, minerals, and vitamins to reduce diseases of metabolic disruption and accelerated aging. Today we're very honored to have one of the most cited researchers in biochemistry and molecular biology, Dr. Bruce Ames. His work spans almost 50 years. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett.
Thank you, Lena. A blueprint is not a house. I've noticed a lot of news lately about the discovery of the gene that controls something or other. For example, last Friday, the San Francisco Chronicle carried a New York Times article with the title, "Study Pinpoints Gene Controlling Fear. Discovery Could Help Humans with Disabling Anxiety." The human genome is a blueprint. The promise implied by the headlines and the accompanying articles is that knowing what lurks behind our genetic closet doors will empower us to promote what's good and prevent what's bad. Let's step back a moment and remember how genes work. DNA makes up our genes, stored in each cell's nucleus and mitochondria. A chemical signal causes a segment of DNA to unwind. Using the chemical bits that make up the DNA segment as a pattern, a protein is built. The protein launches a whole biochemical process that can have a long chemical path with many biological effects. The chemical signal that starts it all can also be at the end of a long biochemical path. What distinguishes one tissue that is one cell type from another is whether a segment unwinds in response to a specific signal. The genes of your liver cells unwind to chemical signals that your brain cell genes do not. This is a roundabout way of saying that genes express themselves in response to their environment, that the path from the environment to the gene and back out to the environment is not a simple one, and that genes in specific tissues respond according to what they are built to do. The 22,000 genes identified by the Human Genome Project was a lot less than what they expected to find. It turns out that, genomically speaking, we're virtually indistinguishable from chimpanzees. On the other hand, we have something like 400,000 unique proteins, or at least that's the current estimate. Many of our most profound biological responses to our environment are built from this nexus of proteins, not from our DNA. In the last decade, the concept of proteomics has gained currency, the study of that vast protein nexus as the engine of our biology, a field parallel to but vastly more complex than genomics. So does pinpointing the gene that causes fear help us live a better life? Another piece of research that showed up in the news last week concerned how nutrients can permanently alter how genes respond to a signal. The experiment was on mice. Mice that are nurtured are less prone to stress and its health consequences than mice that aren't nurtured. The researchers discovered the gene that was expressed by nurturing. Using a nutrient, they were able to turn off that gene and turn well-adjusted mice into stressed-out mice. Did we need to know that someone who is nurtured will be less prone to stress than someone who is not? I'm not downplaying these discoveries in genomics in the least. They're extremely important. But these are discoveries along the way to better understanding how to support our health and well-being. They are not occasions for gaga over the control we think we have over our biology because we have looked at the blueprints and know where the closet door for fear or stress or what have you is located. From a blueprint, you can build a house of horrors or a palace of delight. Not only are your genes not your destiny, they're not even most of who or what you are. That depends on what you and we together have built. For a transcript of this editorial, go to the website yourownhealthandfitness.org and go to the radio show page. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Dr. Fawcett. Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett is a political economist and health educator. He co-produces this radio show and manages the operations of the newly formed nonprofit Your Own Health and Fitness. You can reach him by going to our website, where you'll find information on membership benefits, yourownhealthandfitness.org, or you can call him at 707-874-1496. And now to our very exciting guest. Dr. Bruce Ames is a professor in the Graduate School in Biochemistry and Molecular Biology at the University of California in Berkeley and senior scientist at Children's Hospital Research Institute in Oakland. He is a member of the National Academy of Sciences and was on their commission on life sciences. He is a member of the board of directors of the National, or was, I should say, the board of directors of the National Cancer Institute, the National Cancer Advisory Board. And he is the recipient of 13 major international awards, including most recently the Linus Pauling Institute Prize for Health Research in 2001, the American Society for Microbiology Lifetime Achievement Award in 2001, and the Thomas Hunt Morgan Medal from the Genetic Society of America in 2004. His over 500 publications have resulted in him being among the most of maybe 100 or so most cited scientists in all fields. His website is Bruce Ames, A-M-E-S, BruceAmes.org, if people want to go there and sort of look through some of the research. It starts at about 1952. So welcome to you, and thank you for making the time to talk with us. Dr. Ames? Do we have Dr. Ames on the air? Vinny, do we have Dr.
He doesn't seem to be answering. I did have him on. I'll try to connect with him again.
Okay. Dr. Bruce Ames is kind of well known for certain things. One of the things that he's well known for is something called the Ames test, which is a test that determines whether or not certain materials are carcinogenic. So people may have heard of the Ames test. The people will say something like, oh, did you hear that such and such failed the Ames test? That's Bruce Ames. And one of the reasons for interviewing or talking to Dr. Ames is, as I said, his research goes back to 1952 is when his published research starts. And so this is a person who has been involved in the scientific study of carcinogenesis, and now, and more recently for many years, the influence that nutrients have on whether or not a person is going to be vulnerable. In other words, the protection of biology using micronutrients. And there you are,
okay,
Dr.
So
Bruce
I can hear you, but you couldn't hear me. It was some patch.
Oh, okay. Definitely. Yeah, that does happen sometimes, yeah. So we're very grateful to have you. My first question is, more recently, your work has focused on the consequences of micronutrient deficiencies, including the DNA damage and mitochondrial decay. Now, the mitochondria are the energy-making factories in our cells, and I'd like you to explain how their degradation affects the cells that they inhabit.
Sure. So my field of interest has been disease prevention, and I worked for many years on DNA damage and cancer prevention. And then I realized that cancer is a degenerative disease of aging. Even if everybody stopped smoking and ate a perfect diet, we'd still get cancer because it goes up with the fourth power of age, and it's one of the degenerative diseases of aging. So that got me interested in aging, and right away that gets you into mitochondria. So as you mentioned, mitochondria are the power plants in the cell. So all the fat and carbohydrate you eat, the fuel, gets burnt in the mitochondria, and all the oxygen you breathe in is part of that burning. So burning is basically taking electrons from the fat or carbohydrate and adding them to oxygen. So you add 4 electrons to oxygen, you're home safe to water. And there's always a little bit of byproduct, and the byproduct are 1 electron addition products to oxygen, and they're all powerful oxidants. So as part of living and doing this controlled burning, we're always making a little bit of mutagenic oxidants. And we have lots of defenses to deal with this, but there's always some DNA damage going on from oxidation that are byproducts of either that or inflammation. When your white cells tackle an invader, they also pour out hydrogen peroxide and superoxide and Clorox, all these nasty things. Clorox is hypochlorite. And so I had come to the conclusion that the main damaging agents were not something external, but it's something we were making in our own body as part of normal metabolism. And so we started studying all of this, and what's pretty clear is that if you compare mitochondria in young rats and old rats, and most scientists use rats and mice because they're easy to work with and relatively cheap, but we also use human cells in culture. So if you compare young rats and old rats, you see the mitochondria have decayed. So they're putting out more oxidants, more oxidant byproducts, and they're less efficient. So it's like an old car engine that's putting out more black smoke and is less efficient. So that's every cell is full of 500 or so mitochondria, and all your cells are decaying with age. Your nerve cells and your liver cells and whatever other cell in your body. And in part, that's because the mitochondria are going out. Because as they make more oxygen, you get more mitochondrial damage, and it's kind of a vicious cycle. And now more and more of the degenerative disease of aging have been linked to mitochondria. So a Parkinson's disease involves complex 1 in the mitochondria, and Alzheimer's involves mitochondrial decay, and diabetes involves mitochondrial decay, and the oxidants coming out of mitochondria that damage DNA can contribute to cancer. Anyway, there's more and more interest in mitochondrial decay as being a major factor in aging.
Well, you answered that so brilliantly, and you also answered my next question, which was, what's the link between metabolic disruption and cognitive loss or dementia? And you just answered it. So
I think a lot of people feel that our brain is degenerating too, as well as all our other cells. And if we can keep the mitochondria from decaying, maybe we can do something about that. That's why I got interested in how bad diets make your mitochondria decay faster, and what we can do if you're on a good diet to make the mitochondria decay slower, more slowly. Yeah.
So that also somewhat answers my next question, which is that my understanding is we inherit our mitochondrial DNA from our mother's side, matrilineal side. So can we reverse what we get?
We think you can delay this decay. Now, the fact that mitochondria have their own little piece of DNA, but it only codes for less than 1% of the proteins in the mitochondria. Most of the proteins are made in the nucleus and have a little tag on them and shipped into the mitochondria. So that when you say, our mitochondria from a mother, that's not quite true. The DNA is from a mother, but the proteins may be all from the father, or half and half from the mother and the father. Nobody quite knows, because there are things, something called imprinting, so you can turn off the maternal or paternal chromosome, and people haven't quite figured all that out. But certainly, it's not just the mother. Anyway, that's...
Well, it goes to what Dr. Fawcett said in his editorial about DNA being a blueprint, not a house.
Right.
Yeah. So you've compared the DNA damage from nutrient deficiencies to damage from radiation, and I'd like you to explain how it's like radiation.
Okay. So what we've been doing is I got interested in micronutrients. Micronutrients are the 40 substances, it's about 40, people argue, plus or minus one or two, that we require to keep all our biochemistry going. So you need fuel, and you need fiber for keeping your gut healthy, but you also need these 40 micronutrients. The minerals, calcium, magnesium, manganese, iron, they're a dozen or so minerals, and then the vitamins that we need, and then the essential fatty acids, linoleic, linolenic, and then essential amino acids. It adds up to about 40. So I got interested in these because, one, they're really cheap, and if people aren't getting enough, you can do something about it with sort of zero cost, practically. And there are, people are not up to snuff on the micronutrients. Now, most of them are in the vitamin pill, but not all. A multivitamin mineral pill. Let's see, I lost the train of thought.
Yeah, I thought that might have been happening. I'm actually relieved because it happens to me often, and I think that you're about 45 years, well, no, about 30, anyway, you're...
I'm going to be 77 next
month. You're 77. Okay, I thought because of the length of time that you've been working that you were closer to 80, not because of your the sound of you. Well, 77 is just a pop.
No, I started school in 1950. So.
Yeah, you started publishing right away. Yeah, good for you. Radiation, about how nutrient deficiency damage to the cells looks like radiation damage.
Lost track.
No, fine.
Okay, so... So I got interested in micronutrients because we had I'd always been interested in vitamin C and vitamin E because they're antioxidant micronutrients we require, and I was convinced more and more that most damage to the DNA was coming from oxidation. And then I got interested in folic acid because folic acid is one of the vitamins. Actually, my mentor at Caltech, when I did my PhD, first isolated folic acid from 4 tons of spinach. So folia is a Latin word for leaf. And where does folic acid come from? From spinach and things like that. So a fellow, Jim McGregor, came to my lab on sabbatical, and he has just discovered that folic acid deficiency in mice breaks chromosomes. He had has a good way of measuring broken chromosomes, and if you irradiate the mice, you get more of them. Well, he had given them an odd diet, which turned out to be low in folic acid, and there was all these broken chromosomes, so he wondered where that was coming from, and he tracked it down to the folic acid deficiency. And then he came to my lab, and he had also shown that in one person who had very high chromosome breaks, the person was very low in folic acid, so he gave him folic acid, and it went down. And so my graduate student worked out the mechanism. You put uracil in DNA instead of thymine when you're low in folic acid, because you don't put that methyl group on. And then what really shocked me is when I looked at what level in people seems to cause chromosome breaks, of what level of folic acid, half the poor had been reported to have that level of folic acid. So I said, hey, this is really important. And the poor tend to eat a worse diet and tend to be more folate deficient than the wealthy people. And also wealthy people tend to take vitamin pills and the poor don't. So I got interested in micronutrients in a big way. And then we did some work on iron and showed that too little iron batters up the mitochondria, and too much iron also batters up the mitochondria.
Thank you, yes.
And so with iron, there's a whole kind of U-shaped curve. Too much is bad for you, too little is bad for you, and then there's a kind of a normal range. Well, 2 billion women and children in the world are not getting enough iron. And a quarter of the women in the U.S. who are menstruating are not getting enough iron. They're less than half the amount of iron they need.
This was actually something that got me interested in nutrient medicine. Was many years ago, I read a study that showed that women who exercise and are menstruating and who are don't eschew red meat. They don't eat red meat because this would become popular, getting rid of the fat, so they weren't eating red meat, were extremely low in iron. And it discussed the relationship between pills that people take and how little of it you absorb when you take, because minerals are metals, and iron in excess is very oxidative. It causes a lot of rusting and problems in the body.
Exactly.
So taking it as a pill is not as efficient as taking it in the form of even two or three servings a week of red meat, just once a day for 3 days a week, kind of stop this. So this was a rampant problem. But then, of course, when women stop menstruating, some of them, you know, remember the old Geritol ads where everybody who was tired was supposed to take iron. So I've seen people in my practice who are way overdosed on iron and are developing problems in that direction.
Yeah, no, iron from a pill is okay too, but you just don't want to overdo it. So that's why they sell two kinds of multivitamin pills. One is labeled for seniors or silver, and that's for women past menopause and men, and because men are mostly getting a little too much iron and women are mostly not getting enough, and then one with iron. So if you take a multivitamin mineral a day, that's kind of an insurance pill, and you'll be getting enough iron from that. And so I don't feel strongly. I think my advice is tell everybody, eat a good diet because you need the fiber and you need the other things that aren't in the multivitamin mineral pill, but you can take a multivitamin mineral pill as insurance. And that's, I have an Italian wife and I get a wonderful Mediterranean diet, but I take a multi just as insurance.
Yeah. You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm on the phone with Dr. Bruce Ames, who has been researching cancer and nutrient protection and all these very important things for very close to 50 years. His website, again, is bruceames.org, and you can look at a lot of research right there on the site.
Let me say one more thing.
Oh, please, go ahead.
Micronutrients.
Yes.
Okay. So we got interested in micronutrients, and we started systematically taking human cells in culture. Now, as you take primary human cells, they grow and they grow and then they senesce. So that's well known. If you take cancer cells, they keep on growing. But ordinary human cells will go through a certain number of generations and senesce. Well, so we started growing human cells, but making them slightly zinc deficient or slightly deficient in iron or whatever. And what we found, and what we measured, is damage to the mitochondria, because that ages you faster, or damage to the DNA, that gives you cancer. And we found one after another micronutrients is doing this when you don't have enough. And also, with a number of them, the cells senesce early. That is, they grow at more or less a normal rate when they're a little deficient, but then they just senesce early. They age faster. And so I started thinking about this. In fact, I have a theory on why all this is happening. But what I became convinced of is that we really ought to tune everybody up for micronutrients. It's crazy to be deficient in a micronutrient when the consequences are large and the cost is zilch.
I'm sure you agree with this, but there are many different things that will factor into how much of a micronutrient someone needs, including the fact that nutrients work in concert, which is why you like multivitamins, of course, and what other sorts of things people are being exposed to, and what their genetic predisposition is going to be. For instance, you mentioned in your article that you sent me that was published in European Molecular Biology's organizations, MO Journal, about, you mentioned the MTHFR mutation. There are other mutations that make people not able to methylate or utilize folic acid, for instance. So we have all these different things that make doses of these things dependent on the individual. And then we have the RDA.
Yeah.
So,
the RDA is an approximation. In fact, we're trying to understand what happens when you become deficient for each particular vitamin or mineral, and what shows up first. Is it mitochondrial decay? Is it DNA damage or what? And then using that, try and work it out in people what the optimum level is to keep DNA damage to a minimum or mitochondrial decay to a minimum. Because there's clearly the acute deficiency disease, like not getting any vitamin C and getting scurvy. You used to see that on these long sea voyages when the sailors would go off and then all their teeth would fall out because they weren't getting any vitamin C, and a third of the sailors would die. But now you don't see vitamin see acute deficiency very much anymore, but I think there's lots of vitamin C deficiency out there of people who are not getting enough. And so we're working on all of that.
Well, in addition, vitamin C is a nutrient that wild animals can make in their bodies and human and domestic animals have stopped being able to make. There was a wonderful study done on firefighters where they loaded them up with vitamin C before they went out to fight a fire. They gave them like 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C, which would give somebody a bad case of the runs, and sent them out to fight a fire. And two hours later, they came back in and they retested their levels of vitamin C, and they were absolutely all used up. There wasn't a milligram of vitamin C left in their bodies after taking 10 grams. So we use it up under stress and oxidative stress or just regular stress. Yeah. You know, one thing I neglected to ask you is that the interesting aspect of nutrient deficiencies looking like the kind of damage we see from radiation, then intuitively, is it too much of a jump to say that these nutrients also protect us from radiation damage?
Not exactly. So we did a comparison. We found that, or McGregor had found, and we worked with him on that, that folate deficiency breaks chromosomes like radiation. So we started comparing the two in a very detailed way. And there's kind of no comparison. We were talking about some sizable percent of the population is folate, is too low in folate, and radiation we're talking about very tiny amounts. So I can't get too excited about little bits of, and they work in very, almost exactly the same way.
Yeah, I would argue that actually the amount of radiation that people are being exposed to is changing and increasing exponentially because there are many different forms of radiation that people are now being exposed to that weren't being exposed to before. Aside from things like medical radiation, we now have new forms of radiation that we're being bombarded by.
Well, we could argue about that.
Yeah,
but,
I'm sure we could.
The amounts seem to me very tiny compared to the hazard of not getting your vitamins and doing the same thing.
No, all I was trying to say is that another encouragement to get people to finally go and get themselves a nice multivitamin, a nice robust therapeutic dose of multivitamins, is the fact that we are in fact also being exposed to more radiation. So just to kind of feed the mitochondria and take care of generally.
Yeah. So I went to Costco and got a bottle of 350 pills for $10. So it really doesn't, a year's supply costs very little. And so it's something one should do kind of routinely. But a multivitamin doesn't have some things. One, they don't put enough magnesium and calcium in there because that would make the pill too big and you couldn't swallow it. So there's only a small amount of magnesium and calcium. So if you also should be sure to get some calcium in your diet, and non-fat yogurt's a very good way of doing that.
Yeah, though when you take the butter fat out of milk, it blocks your absorption of the calcium. So it actually is better to go ahead and have a little fat. Well, here we are arguing, and you're like this person that I shouldn't argue with because you're amazing. So
you can have whipped cream on your ice cream.
There you go. A little whipped cream on your ice cream to get the butter fat you need to make it up.
A multivitamin mineral doesn't have the omega-3 fatty acids. So the whole country is short of these long-chain omega-3 fatty acids that you get from deep-sea fish. And so I think it's valuable to eat fish, eat a little less meat and a little more fish. If you're a vegetarian, you're doing that anyway, or at least a vegetarian who eats fish. But now, you can also get the omega-3 precursor, linolenic acid, from flaxseed and other things like and nuts, but people aren't eating a lot of those, so I think it's good to eat some salmon and some deep-sea fish. And I make it a policy not to eat meat twice a day. If I have meat at lunch, I don't eat any for dinner, and vice versa. So these, most of us are getting a little too much meat and not enough fish. And so anyway, you could also take a fish oil capsule.
Yeah.
Those, again, are relatively cheap.
Yeah.
And now they've figured out how to make them that so they don't smell fishy and
they distill them, but they're still full of the good fats.
Yeah.
We're going to have to take a brief musical break. I just want to remind people this is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm on the phone with Dr. Bruce Ames. His website again, BruceAmes.org. We're going to take a brief musical break, and when we come back, we'll come back to this interview about nutrients and protection with nutrients from cancer and aging and whatnot. So stay put. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Your molecular structure is really something fine. A first-rate example of functional design. Those cosmic undulations are steady coming through. Your molecular structure, baby, me and me. Your cellular organization is really something choice. Electromagnetism about to make me lose my voice. Got all my circuits open, my systems reading gold. Your cellular organization, baby, stop the show.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman on the phone today with Dr. Bruce Ames, A-M-E-S. His website again is BruceAmes.org. And I want to remind you, if you missed parts of today's show and you want to get a copy of this or any other, you can go to the website any time of the day or night during the week and listen to the show all week at yourownhealthandfitness.org. You can also get a copy of this or any other in the series by calling 707-874-2772, and you'll find information on the website about the benefits of joining the nonprofit, who our guests are, and you can find the show list as well. So, Dr. Ames, how does aging affect the efficiency of the enzyme systems that are required for nutrients to do their jobs? Because, you know, you can take vitamins, but what if the enzymes aren't working?
Okay. Can I just add a footnote to the last
discussion? Always. Absolutely.
And then I'll go on to that.
Sure.
So I was saying that you don't get everything in a multivitamin mineral pill, so you still need to eat a good diet, more less refined foods, more whole grains, more fish and less meat, and lots of fruits and vegetables. Because what you don't get in a multivitamin mineral pill is fiber. And fiber is really important for your gut health. And if your gut health isn't good, you start leaking bacteria into your body and you get all inflamed and all sorts of things. And also the phenolics in plants that are apparently good for the gut. And then, as I was saying, the omega-3 fatty acids are important to get from fat.
Yeah, actually, interestingly, another good source of fiber for people, since you can buy it organically, is flaxseed meal. Or you can buy the fresh flax seeds and keep them in the fridge because they get rancid and then they're oxidated. You know, they're damaged.
Yeah, oxidized fat isn't so good.
No. So you keep them in the fridge and you can grind them up in a coffee grinder. And that flaxseed meal, if you're not sensitive to flax seeds, is a wonderful form of fiber. And psyllium, which is one of the favorites of most people, is actually grown in India and it's very highly sprayed. But also keeping in mind that just fresh fruits and vegetables are soluble fiber, which is the best form for your colon.
Yeah, well, you need both soluble and insoluble fiber.
Yeah.
They do somewhat different things.
And then we've got nuts, too, which help.
Yeah, nuts are good, healthy food. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's micronutrients. Let's go on to
the enzyme system.
Yeah, so, I've been particularly interested in the enzymes in mitochondria because mitochondrial decay is what I'm interested in. So with age, all sorts of things are changing. And one of the things that's happening is your mitochondria decaying. So I had a wonderful postdoc, Tori Hagen, in my lab, and he started comparing mitochondria from old rats and young rats. Now, people have been doing that for a long time, but they were sort of fooling themselves because mitochondria from old rats are quite heterogeneous, and they're very fragile. So when you grind up the cell, you lose most of them. So doesn't this make
the animal rather cross at you when you do this?
Oh yeah. With rats you take out.
They get angry at you if you take out their livers.
So, anyway, so you can't do that with graduate students. Right?
Although you might want to, probably.
So he figured out a way to look at mitochondria and get the basically perfused the animals and got out liver cells, hepatocytes, and they're not fragile, so you get the same yield in young and old. And then he looked at mitochondrial function in the hepatocytes, and he found all sorts of things were decaying between the old rats and the young rats. The cardiolipin, which is a key lipid in the mitochondrial membrane, went down by half, and so that means all the membranes are getting distorted or deformed. And then the membrane potential, mitochondria are like rechargeable batteries. You're basically putting a charge across a membrane, and that charge allows the mitochondria to do work and make ATP. That's the high-energy chemical energy that powers your muscles and all your biochemistry. And you're making kilos of ATP every day in the body, and it's all made in the mitochondria. So you can measure the membrane potential of the mitochondria. And old rats had mitochondria that were less powered up than young rats. And then he measured the oxygen utilization and the oxidant leakage. So old rats, the mitochondria leaking out much more oxidants than the young rats, where it's a pretty 99% efficient system of adding four electrons. And so then we started looking on how to, could we reverse some of this? And some Italians had published a paper that they fed old rats acetyl-carnitine, and some aspect of mitochondria got better. So we were intrigued by the paper. It was funded by a company that sells it over-the-counter in Italy as a pick-me-up acetyl-carnitine.
Can I ask you a brief question? When you talked about the studies you did with acetyl-carnitine, I asked you whether you'd looked at the effects of just taking carnitine, since carnitine is also very heart-protective. See, yeah. Acetyl-carnitine goes in the brain, but the heart is, the regular carnitine is good. So I'm just wondering whether you would suggest people take both or...
Well, I think we started with acetyl-carnitine because this Italian group could use that. But later we did a paper comparing carnitine and acetyl-carnitine. And for most things, they were the same, but acetyl-carnitine seems to work on the brain better. I think it gets through the blood-brain barrier better. Now, carnitine, its function is to ferry fatty acids into the mitochondria to burn them. So you load a fatty acid onto the carnitine, pump it in through the membrane, take off the fatty acid, burn it, and pump out a free carnitine and load it up again. So it's the transporter. So it's only used in the mitochondria. That's a normal biochemical. Anyway, we had developed all these neat methods for looking at mitochondrial function, and we fed the acetyl-carnitine for a few weeks. Lo and behold, the cardiolipin, which was down by half, came back to the level of a young animal in the mitochondria.
Hmm.
We fed it to old rats, and the oxygen utilization was better, and the membrane potential was better. The only thing that wasn't better is the old mitochondria were still pouring out more oxidants than the young. So then we said, we're really rejuvenating mitochondria except for this one thing. Let's try and find something that helps deal with the oxidants. And we found several things. One was a chemical called PBN that's a spin trap, and it's a synthetic chemical, and we ended up going with the other one, which was lipoic acid, which is another mitochondrial metabolite. It's used only in mitochondria as a coenzyme, and it's a quite a strong antioxidant because it has two sulfhydryl groups on it. So, and both these compounds have been sold in the health food store for years. So, and when we tried the lipoic acid, it lowers the level of oxidants in the old rat in the mitochondria. So then we tried the two together, and as I made the mistake of telling some reporter, the old rats got up and did the Macarena. And so that appeared in the news stories all over the world when our papers came out. And I got this very angry letter from some Scottish pharmacologist who chewed me out for about 5 pages, saying the old rats didn't really get up and do the Macarena. It was very unscholarly to say that, et cetera, et cetera. And I wrote him back. It was a joke. But anyway, I guess he didn't
get it. God, how humorless. You'd think the Scots would have a better sense of humor.
Oh,
maybe
some
he,
do, but this
yeah,
guy didn't.
Too bad.
Anyway, so we found that two together really solved all the problems of the old mitochondria. And since so many of the degenerative diseases of aging are being linked to mitochondria, as I mentioned, Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, we got all excited. And the university said, well, we really ought to patent that. We said, can you really patent two compounds that are normal biochemicals and have been out there for years? And they said, yeah, you can patent a combination. And they did. And so they got a patent on the combination. And then they were going to license it to some company. Or there were several companies that might be interested, but I didn't like the quality of any of the companies, and I got nervous. What are they going to do with all of this? So I formed a company called Juvenon with a businessman friend, and we licensed the university patent. Now, I put all my stock in a foundation, so I get no money from the company, so I just decided to divorce myself financially from all of this. But I'm very anxious for the company to succeed because the money, the profits from selling this pill are going into clinical trials and people.
Okay. One of the nice things about lipoic acid is, as you said, it's an antioxidant. So it seems to encourage the production of glutathione, which is our main detoxification chemical. And people get very confused about this concept of detoxification. I remember many, many years ago, I was lucky enough to interview Sid Baker, who tried to explain that detoxification isn't doing a long fast or doing high colonics or something. It has to do with how well your liver and all of the important chemicals that are made move these materials through you, you know, how well you make glutathione. And, of course, when you talk about folic acid and the B vitamins and all this, these are important partially because when this pathway gets hosed up, you get stuck on the way to glutathione at homocysteine, which causes all kinds of problems in the vascular system. So, again, micronutrients, B vitamins, and folic acid promote healthy detoxification.
Yeah, you can't keep any of your biochemistry going well unless you have all the vitamins and minerals. And so, Juvenon is www.juvenon.com if anybody's interested.
Okay.
There are also some knockoffs of the patent, and you can buy them individually.
Yeah, you can buy lipoic acid and acetyl L-carnitine easily. The only thing I was really curious about is that many, many years ago, I also interviewed Brian Leibowitz, who worked with Linus Pauling, and he always said that he really thought that the carnitine, the straight carnitine, was very effective as it was. He wrote a book on carnitine and was very, you know, and there's also this issue of people are increasingly taking statin drugs, which interferes with the production of carnitine and with CoQ10, which protect the heart. So, your research showed that the acetyl L-carnitine was just as effective in protecting the heart as regular carnitine alone?
Tori Hagen has done that. Mm-hmm. He's up in Oregon State.
That's good news.
And Juvenon is using the best ingredients, so you never, in this field, you never quite know what you're getting. And
well, except that most of the pharmaceutical, there are a few pharmaceutical companies producing all of these raw materials for these vitamins.
Well, they come from different sources.
Yeah, from Germany and stuff.
So the one thing Juvenon did, they have three clinical trials in various stages. One's just finished, but I'm not allowed to talk about it until the paper comes out. But one of the things we did was I made sure that any time we got a letter from a customer, and they sold $5 million of pills last year. Any time we get a letter from a customer, it goes into a searchable database. I want to keep tight eye on side effects. Are there some side effects that come up regularly? And also on what customers say they feel so we can devise clinical trials, because that the reports are just anecdotal.
Yeah.
For example, we got 5 or 6 reports from people who said, oh, they measure their blood pressure every week because they have high blood pressure. And when they took Juvenon, the blood pressure went down.
That's good news.
So we ended up doing a clinical trial on hypertension, on blood pressure.
Yeah, and we're waiting for the results on that.
Yeah, so I know the results, and I'm happy about them, but I can't really...
You're not supposed to talk
about
it.
Okay,
yeah.
And then there's one on diabetes that's going to come, and one on cognition.
Yeah, well, there's no question that when you're dealing with diabetes, along with dietary changes where you're reducing the amount of blood sugar that someone's making and the amount of insulin they have to produce, putting them on an aggressive antioxidant program and also getting some other micronutrients in that you mentioned in your various papers, biotin is very, very low. Vitamin D, you talk about how important vitamin D is. Before you launch, incidentally, let me just say this is your own health and fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm on the phone with Dr. Bruce Ames, A-M-E-S, who has been researching this whole connection between cancer and protection from cancer and aging and nutrients, pretty much at the forefront of this, you know, in the early 50s. So we're very honored to have him. Again, his website at bruceames.org.
So anyway, so I'm very happy with how everything's going. And we're working in the lab on trying to improve the mixture and add other things. We did add one thing to the formula, and that is about 25 out of 5,000 letters we got, or emails really, were complained about some side effect, and all the others were very enthusiastic about feeling better for this or that. And so the side effects are the main, they were all minor, but the main one was rashes. So 20 people out of 5,000 got a rash when they took Juvenon. And, of course, they either stopped it or if they asked us, we said, well, don't take it. Now, one lady was very upset that she couldn't take the Juvenon. And so one of the people in the company had a hunch that it might be interfering with biotin in a few people. So biotin and lipoic acid come off the same pathway.
Oh, that's interesting.
And there's a paper in the literature that if you put high lipoic acid, you can interfere a little bit with biotin synthesis. So what we suspected is that if some people are marginally biotin deficient, adding lipoic acid might put them over, and one of the symptoms of biotin deficiency is a rash. So anyway, so this lady was very insistent, so this fellow working with Juvenon suggested that why doesn't she wait a couple of weeks till the rash is all over, and then take some biotin pill every day, and then try the Juvenon to see if it makes a difference. She did. There was no rash, and she was happy. And we've since. So we added biotin to the pill.
Yeah, Dr. Ames.
A vitamin.
Yeah, I just need to get you off of Juvenon for a minute because this is a commercial-free radio station.
It's I understand.
Yeah, so we can't sort of hammer away on a product. But,
right, okay.
But the research on lipoic acid and acetyl L-carnitine together and this issue of when you raise certain nutrients, you also need to raise others. For instance, if you increase the amount of folate in your diet, you will also need to increase the amount of B12 and probably the amount of vitamin K, because there's all these synergistic reactions between vitamins. And when you raise the amount of one, you may need to look at the others. The other thing I've noticed about alpha lipoic,
there are also ratios. So most people in the country are magnesium deficient. You get magnesium from chlorophyll. Magnesium is present in chlorophyll, so from greens and from whole grains, and a lot of people don't eat those things.
Yeah, or people have problems, like people who have problems with their thyroids are low in zinc and are low in magnesium. Diabetics are low in vitamin D and biotin and also in zinc.
Yeah, and vegetarians tend to be low in B6 and B12.
B12 particularly, and carnitine, because they're not eating meat, and carnitine is from meat, even though the pills that you buy in the store are from pharmaceutical grade. They're not made from meat.
Well, you can make carnitine in your body. It's just...
Sure.
We don't quite make enough.
No. Well, and also it just depends on what the person's dealing with. But let's talk for a moment about cancer. Because that's like such a big deal in your research. I mean, you're the famous cancer guy. I mean, it's the Ames test, right? Everybody knows about the Ames test.
We developed that back in the late 60s, early 70s. It was a test for mutagens, and we argued that carcinogens, chemicals that cause cancer, were working because they were causing mutations. And so we developed a simple test for picking up agents that cause mutations, and it was used. I never patented it because I was trying to convince people that that was interesting, and I thought it'd be a So, but every drug company in the world started using it to screen out nasty chemicals. And now people ask me if I'm the Ames test, and it seems so long ago. I say, oh no, it's my father.
That's cute. You know, I recently heard that. I'm doing that same hydrogen peroxide. I recently heard that hydrogen peroxide failed the Ames test, and people use it quite readily. You know, they squirt it into their pockets in their teeth, or some people rinse their teeth with it. I've even had people in my office who swear that drinking it stopped their chronic fatigue or Lyme disease.
No, but hydrogen peroxide is a known mutagen, and it's an oxidative mutagen. It's one of the things made by radiation, but it doesn't mean. You have very powerful enzymes that destroy hydrogen peroxide in the body. And so you can put a little on the skin. It isn't really...
Yeah, it's wonderful for cuts and things.
Yeah. So, but the main hydrogen peroxide you're making in your body is from every time you get invaded from a virus or a bacteria. So then your white cells are defending you. And how do they defend you? They find the invader because it's foreign. And they inundate it with hypochlorite, which is HOCl, which is a powerful oxidant, with hydrogen peroxide, which is a powerful oxidant, with nitrogen oxide and superoxide, which make peroxynitrite, which is a powerful oxidant, and you're incinerating the cell or the invader. So if you have a chronic inflammation, then eventually that leads to cancer, like
with
Helicobacter in your stomach or a hepatitis B virus.
Yeah, and unresolved. And sometimes people are just walking around with a low-grade infection, a dental infection sometimes, something like that. You're saying that contributes to carcinogenesis.
Oh, yeah. And inflammation is causing about 20% of the cancer in the world.
Wow.
And that gets me to obesity, because obese people are all inflamed. And my colleague, Mark Shiganaga here, has a whole theory about bugs leaking through the gut, and that's what's causing the inflammation, because your gut is unhappy.
I could argue a little bit with you about the obesity thing, because I have seen people who, I don't know whether I'd call them obese. I mean, one of the problems is the whole obesity epidemic scare has caused the rating system for how much you're allowed to weigh to go down. So now it's like some people who would just be considered overweight are now considered obese. And some of those people are very active and eat whole foods and are pretty healthy. So I think it's kind of a broad brush. But I know that you're talking about a kind of morbid obesity that we're seeing an increase. About cancer in children? I mean, there certainly has been, you said that generally that it looks to you as though cancer rates are going down. I don't know if I agree, but it certainly also looks to me as though younger and younger people are getting cancer.
When cancer goes up with the fourth power of age, so there's very little cancer in young people, and the cancer that there is has always been tracked to inheriting a mutant gene from your mother or your father. And so you have to you have two copies of every gene, so if you to get cancer, you need to knock them both out, and so it's a double hit. And if you inherit one mutant gene, then you can get cancer as a kid.
So what about you don't then think that environmental factors are like stress and pollution in the environment, particularly with the poor, are factors in terms of them getting sicker?
No, I think the main factor in the poor having more cancer is bad diets and smoking by far. Pollution, really, that people have been looking for 30 years and really haven't found anything very convincing that it's really contributing to cancer. We've written lots of papers.
So you're not, for instance, you're not concerned about metal toxicity and that sort of thing. From what you're seeing from your research, that's not the big issue. The big issue is whether or not the body has ample nutrient protection.
That's what I think, yeah.
Okay.
And,
that's fair.
Let me say one more thing about obesity. So 40 different diseases have been linked to obesity. The poor are leading the way. African Americans and Hispanics are much higher frequency of being obese. At Children's Hospital, where I'm working now, a third of the kids coming in are obese, and we have a large minority population. And people have shown that obese people are at the bottom of the heap for micronutrients. So they're eating refined foods, donuts and sugary soft drinks are the sources of calories.
Well, inexpensive fast foods and foods you can buy at a liquor store.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. And so that doesn't have any vitamins and minerals. So now if you're obese and exercising and taking a multivitamin pill, you're probably in much better shape. So I think a lot of the different diseases linked, and cancers certainly linked to being obese, a much higher rate of cancer.
Well, let me challenge you then. From your perspective, since you're working at Children's Hospital in Oakland, what do you think should be done? Because you're dealing with a population at risk who has a lack of education and maybe a lack of education and a lack of resources. Like I said to you on the phone, I've said this many times on the air, you can buy drugs on the street in certain neighborhoods, but you can't get a head of lettuce because they're liquor stores. So what would you recommend that happens now? Is this a public health problem, or what do we do?
What we're doing now is we're working with some of the obese children coming into Children's Hospital, and we're trying to see, do they have more chromosome breaks? And if I suspect they will, because they're eating mostly a pretty bad diet, and we've developed a method for looking at chromosome breaks in people. And if they do, then we'll see if you give them a multivitamin mineral, does it help? And the Cancer Institute has been trying to get the poor to eat 5 portions of fruits and vegetables a day. Now it's up to 9 portions for 25 years with really very little success.
Well, where are they supposed to get this stuff? I mean, unless we provide it in their schools, I'm not sure where the access to these foods is going to come from.
Because,
I'm sorry, I don't agree with that. I think the problem primarily is access.
The Asians coming over are very poor, a lot of them, and they seem to eat a good diet. So I'm not saying it's all one thing. It's clearly a complicated issue. But if it turns out that the multivitamin will solve some of the problems, then one way is to say, eat a good diet, change the message. Eat a good diet, but also take a multivitamin.
Yeah, well, that would help.
Trying to see in people, we've been doing a lot on human cells and culture, and now we're moving to people.
Yeah, well, I'm completely out of time, and I really appreciate you letting me push your buttons and beat you up a little bit on the air. You're just a joy to have as a guest. Thank you so much, and continued good health and good work, Dr.
Okay.
Bruce Ames.
Thank you. Bye then.
Bye-bye. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. If you need more information, or if you want a CD copy of this or any other in the series Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number 24 hours a day at 707-874-2772. For a list of other available shows or information about guests and news about the nonprofit and the benefits of membership, go to the website, yourownhealthandfitness.org. You can also listen to the show there all week long. Your Own Health and Fitness is a joint production of Your Own Health and Fitness and KPFA-FM. The engineer for Your Own Health and Fitness is Vinnie Beecham. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.